Trekkies, and welcome to Trek Freaks. This is a part of the Geek Freaks Podcast Network. On this podcast, we review and analyze episodes of Star Trek, starting all the way back at the original series. My name's John, I'll be one of your hosts, joined today by a very special co-host, Squeaks.
Squeaks! I'm super, thank you for having me. Super excited to be here for the first time ever on Trek Freaks.
If you guys don't recognize Squeaks, he's in a lot of our other podcasts, especially the Geek Freaks News of the Week. He's actually on the most recent episode of Disney Moms Gone Wrong when they review Thor, right? How'd that go?
It was wonderful. I felt so. Susie has had really good questions that almost had me dumbfounded. I was like, I don't know. I never thought about that before. whatever. And then it's like making me forget like certain things that happened, but it was fun. You know, I try to be here when needed.
Yeah, what it sounds like is you got schooled by the Disney moms, right?
I almost felt I did. Like maybe I was the worst person to ask to be on to co-host with this. So,
nah, that's great. I'm sure it was fun. All right, what episode of the original series are we reviewing today?
All right, sir, we are reviewing the original series, season 2, episode 13, Obsession.
Nice, nice. All right, before we get into that, I got a question for you. Are you ready?
Oh, yes, I'm ready.
All right. Is there anything non-essential in your life that you might obsess over?
Oh, man. This is a...
I say non-essential, like, you know, everybody needs
for sure
the basics of life and family and stuff like that.
But... yeah, you're like, well, not family. I don't need that. Goodness gracious. Right. Okay. So, man, Jonathan coming out with some of the best questions like already that I've ever heard on the podcast. Okay, so I'm going to have to say I don't have a crazy manga collection, but I do have to kind of mix it with my comics. And that's just for, you know, storytelling purposes. It kind of gets me out of the real world to enjoy something different. And every night I either read a comic book or a manga. Like even behind me, you'll see some mangas there. The wife was nice enough to let me get that big box of Demon Slayer of all the issues. So, I just like to be transported to something, a different thing. And that's actually, I mean, my camera's a little bit up too. I have a Star Trek book from the Next Generation called Shadows. What is it? Shadows Have Offended. So I'll be reading that next. I bought it and I was like, I gotta have this, and then I haven't picked it up since. So, but yeah, I think it has to be at least my comics and manga. Yeah. What about you, sir? What is something that you can?
So I have a terrible habit of throwing myself into obsessions all the time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Some people will get like hooked on one thing, like drugs or alcohol or whatever. No, I get obsessed. I get obsessed with whatever like the new hobby is I have. Like. Yeah. I don't know, months ago or probably a year ago by now, I don't know. I got a 3D printer and I was like,
oh, sure,
so obsessed with like, I gotta have that thing running 24/7. If it's not running, I'm just wasting time. I need to be printing something. Mm-hmm. And that was so dumb. I'm thinking about it all the time. I'm always trying to look up new models to print, started designing my own models. And then I realized how much work it is when you actually take the thing off the printer and you want to like smooth it out and make it really pretty. That part sucks. So I lose interest and then I get into something else and I like totally obsess over it for a while, then lose interest in that. So yeah, I have different obsessions all the time. It's just whatever the latest hobby is.
True. I get you. I just bought myself a compound bow. So just like going so full out. Yeah, buying the bow, needing the arrows, getting the target, like let's fucking do this. So, and now I literally just walk around like I'm Hawkeye. So yeah. Yeah,
nice.
Shoot, that's funny. That's funny. Yeah,
I like it.
You need to all get right, back right. on you need to get back on that though real quick, because I got a lot of figures in this room, and if you could get to like well enough to, I mean, I'm willing to provide you some income if you can make me some dope-ass collectibles.
Oh, with 3D printing?
Yeah, with the 3D printer.
I see people that do that, but imagine your Funko Pops are nice and smooth and pretty, right?
Yeah.
A 3D printer, everything it prints has lines in it. And so to clean that up, most people sand the plastic. I don't know about you. I'm fine with sanding wood. Sanding plastic is terrible.
Really?
It's like, it doesn't sand well. It's just so hard to... So some people, or smarter people, I think, use Bondo and other fillers to like make it smooth, and then they sand that stuff down. That comes out pretty darn good. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot of work. I'm like, it's a lot more work than a Funko Pop costs. You know, consider like if I go to my job, I could work for like an hour and earn a Funko Pop every hour or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It would take me many hours to make a custom Funko Pop.
That's funny. That's funny.
So, yeah. But someday we'll have to get together and think of some unique creative things to print.
I believe in you. So.
All right. You ready for our Warp Speed recap?
Yes, sir.
While visiting a strange planet to mine a very rare material, the away team is attacked and two crewmen are left dead. Though it will delay their critical medical supply delivery, Captain Kirk decides they will stay until they can find out what or who did this. It appears to be a cloud-like alien which Kirk has encountered once before. This is personal, and Kirk chooses to pursue the alien. Pursuit turns into defense, defense turns into setting of a trap. Though the captain and another crewman are nearly lost, the trap works and the alien is destroyed. The crew is safe and continues on to their medical delivery. So yeah, that was a pretty interesting episode. This recap definitely skims over a lot because it was a lot going on in the episode. But you'll I guess we'll go over it all because I took way too detailed the notes. Of some stuff, and then critical conversations. I'm just like, that was just a lot of stuff to say this, and skimmed over.
But it's true, though. I mean, it's true. I mean, once we break it down, then yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Overall, what'd you think of the story before we get into the scene by scene?
I liked it very much. Without getting into scene by scene, I liked the whole conflict of this inner battle that Captain Kirk had with himself. On top of, I liked this whole like mystery fog that was killing these crewmen, and it was like, it's what I liked about it was that it ended up just being the fog overall, like this mineral, whatever the case may be. It had me fooled for a little bit where I thought we were going to actually see like a true being behind it or a life form. Like in the beginning, it was kind of like, oh, cool, this is a neat mystery to kind of feel or try to figure out with Captain Kirk, instead of just being announced to the villain up front, and this is the conflict throughout the whole episode. So between like the inner battles with himself and then the actual like villain, you could say itself outside on the planet, I thought it was very enjoyable. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I agree. All right, let's get into the, I call it mission report. I change the name on here all the time, but we'll go through the scene by scene analysis here. all right, so we start with the away mission. Spock and Kirk are on this strange planet. We see they're scanning for Tritanium. I believe in other Star Treks we hear that their hull of the ship is made of Tritanium. And we see this like plume of smoke that kind of comes out and it kind of visits them, I guess, is like around them for a little bit. And then it leaves. It gets kind of sucked back into this rock, which is a kind of cheesy but effective practical effect of just playing the tape backwards with smoke. I thought that was kind of funny.
Oh shit, I didn't even think about it like that, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, they didn't have like, you know, great animation and stuff, so they had to do things practically, but light a smoke bomb and let it smoke out, and then it lingers for a little bit, and then like, all right, let's just play that backwards. And
that's funny. I didn't even catch on to that. That's funny.
Spock uses his phaser to shoot off a sample of the minerals. I thought that was super cheesy, the way it's just, I don't know. It didn't look believable. Okay. What do you think?
I tried to ignore everything that, because it's the time frame, right? So like anything was kind of like that, I try to just put that past me. Because there was one part where they run into a rock. It was like a backdrop, and it moved, and it's like, come on. So I try to ignore that stuff. So
I pick on that stuff too much, but I should just like, oh yeah, I like Star Trek. Don't be a jerk and pick out every little, you know, defect. Yeah,
you have to put yourself in like that time frame of when it was made. So honestly, anything that I don't have an opinion on that stuff because, like I said, I look past it. I never seen a phaser. At least, I mean, you're well more experienced than me. I never seen a phaser just shooting something to gather like a piece of something. Like that?
Yeah, they use it to like blast open things and stuff like that, but to cut off a sample of a mineral, that seems kind of odd. And it's Tritanium, at least that's what they're looking for. So maybe it wasn't Tritanium because it broke off, but imagine if a ship's hull is made out of that, you know, a single phaser shot probably shouldn't penetrate it.
Yeah. So I look past on all those like old school That's cool stuff.
To be fair, these episodes are remastered, at least if you're watching it on Paramount Plus. And there's a lot of things that I pay attention to now that I'm like, oh man, I can't imagine how bad that must have looked, you know, back in the 60s. Like just the cloud of smoke, at least when they're in space, it actually looks pretty good. I don't know what it was before because, you know, they have it on the view screen. And so it's not just going to be like a smoke effect like we see on the planet. But it looked really good. And it just makes me think like, man, I kind of want to, I say it all the time, I want to do a side-by-side comparison of the original before the remaster and see how it looks. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that would have been pretty rough.
That's actually something I thought about. I wanted to ask you, there was a scene where it just shows their starship. Sorry, I'm used to different series.
So Enterprise.
Enterprise. Yeah. Okay. Enterprise. Yeah. Just flying over. And it's like, mm-hmm. I was looking at it, I was like, that's actually not that bad for this old of a thing. So I'm like, I was going to ask you that too, if it was like redone for Paramount Plus or not.
Very much. Any space shot is like, you know, completely redone.
Got it. Okay.
And I think they hold back a little bit to try to make it kind of fit the era, but they definitely make them look so much better.
Yeah.
When I have seen like original space shots recently, I'm like, oh man, that's rough. It is just all grainy and it has an outline. It's just,
Gonna actually do that. I'm gonna look that up too and kind of see it side by side. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So after they take that sample of the mineral, Kirk smells like honey in the air is how he describes it. And then three of the red shirts are attacked. Two of them are killed by a cloud of smoke, like the one that came out of the rock. So Kirk seems to know, he seems eerie about the whole situation. He recognizes these signs around him, the smell of honey and cloud. I don't remember if he saw the cloud at this point.
Yeah, I don't think he saw it. I think he just kept smelling it.
Yeah, but he, and the fact that the crewman died from something after he smelled that smell.
Yeah.
He was super suspicious. So if you were the captain at this point, what would you do? You guys are on the strange planet. You're looking for this material.
This is post-death of the crewman?
Yeah. Okay. After these red shirts. Crewmen are dead.
Okay. Damn. So I would definitely have to stay there for a moment longer and try to figure out what's going on. It's kind of like what Kirk was doing. But it's hard though, because at the same time you have these dead bodies and you want to be reckless with it, right? But I think I would have to stay there longer to figure out what the heck happened. Like, how are these people in the state that they're in right now?
Yeah.
What would you call it? Would you say like, hey, beam me up? What the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, right out the gate, he thinks he knows what it is, or he thinks he has this, you know, he's the right word at some point, but it's like intuition of what's going on, but he doesn't tell anybody right away until, you know, later on he does. But it's like, I would first beam everybody back to the ship and then get your core team around you and explain what you think it is and then approach it scientifically. He's emotional because of, you know, what happened in the past with this creature. So that's where, you know, we get into him being obsessed and reacting emotionally. But if you can think logically, logic always, you know, trumps emotion, you are much more likely to find at least a way to learn from this creature and eventually be able to fight it.
So I don't want to go like, because we're going to break down later scenes and whatnot. I don't want to go too far of why I think he felt a certain way, but so I'll come back to it at that moment, you know? But I just think he had that intuition, but he's like, nah, this can't be it. And then it was like, oh crap, it is. So that's why he probably wasn't thinking, like you said, logically.
That's true. Yeah. He was probably doubting himself at that point.
Yeah. Like can it really be, you know, what I think it is?
Yeah.
I do want to say something though about like some of these scenes that I kind of appreciated. Was the commanding or giving orders of random crewmen, like these red shirts, like you said. Mm-hmm. I don't recall like seeing that very often in Star Trek, because it's always main crew guys, right? You know, they're always talking to each other. You see the Spock and, you know, I mean, I don't know, Discovery and Sanu. Like, it's always the main characters. So I was like, I don't know why that caught my attention. And like I said, maybe you're going to have way more experience than I am. I don't know why, but that caught my attention. I was like, ah, oh, that's kind of neat. Like, yeah. They're just telling these randoms to do something, you know?
And I think that's way more common in the original series. Because like you're saying, in other series, you have more, like regular characters that you follow. And they're more part of the story more often and stuff like that. In the original series, they have a lot more death. And it's a lot more, like, unfortunately acceptable that, oh, crap, somebody died again. And, you know, you don't see that very much. I mean, every once in a while, you see, oh, no, this diplomat died, and they show his body, and then that's the whole episode is about trying to find out how he died.
Yeah.
But the red shirts are, like, a common joke that they're the expendable ones that go out on the away missions. And, you know, if there's three guys in yellow and one guy in red, that guy's going to be the one that dies almost every time. Yeah. So,
I'm paying attention to that now.
Yeah, it's it's unfortunate, but it's kind of funny. And I mean, later in other shows, pretty much all the other Star Trek, you don't see that kind of like carelessness with the crew, like, you know, letting people die kind of thing. And Kirk does feel remorse every time one's lost. He's like, oh, no, this is, you know, how can I be the one that makes the decisions that lead to these men dying and stuff like that.
Oh, no, I did it again.
But it continues to happen. It's kind of a joke. But they used it, you know, in that original series to push the stories along.
Yeah, I actually like that. That was, like I said, I don't know why, but that really just caught my eye. So, that was good. Okay.
One thing a little bit different with this episode, though, is they made you feel for one of the red shirts, which was, we're going to get to him in just a second.
Yeah.
So, when they get back to the ship after the intro, they're trying to save the one survivor of the three men. And then we hear a little bit of the backstory that 11 years ago, a crew was attacked in the same method, similar signs and all that stuff. And then Rizzo is wakened in sick bay, and he confirms what the captain was suspecting, which is he also smelt the scent of honey and sensed some type of intelligent presence. So pretty much that kind of reassures the captain that he's not crazy. Somebody else smelt it, and they could tell there was something alive there. So we go to the bridge. Spock has been scanning the planet for life. Kirk suggests that the entity may be able to change itself or hide itself from sensor scans. And we do find out later that it's able to like change its molecular structure or something. It changes what it is. That'd be almost impossible to actually search for it. Spock leaves to look over the record tapes with McCoy to kind of review, because they talked about how 11 years ago this happened to another ship. So they're going to review the records to try to figure out how to find what they're looking for. Then we get a close-up of Ensign Garavik. I'm going to try not to mess up his name. I typed it so many times in my notes, but it's an odd name for me at least. Ensign Garavik. We get a close-up of him as he enters the bridge. And it's funny, like I was kind of hinting at earlier, he's a red shirt, so they're usually the most expendable. They're not, common regular characters usually. But this one's given a little bit more screen time than any other one. So right away we know we're going to build some kind of relationship with him. And then Kirk seems to be meeting him for the first time and asks if he must be the new guy on the ship. That to me, I know it's the story trying to introduce the character so that we can meet him for the first time and stuff. But doesn't that seem odd to you that the captain doesn't know everybody that's on his ship?
Damn, you know what? I took it as like he was sent there, but I guess that wouldn't make sense either, though, because then they're already there. So when he came onto the ship and that whole like brand new interaction, I'm like, hey, you're the new head of security, whatever the case may be. Yeah. I took that as like somehow he was flown in, right? Because it is weird that he doesn't know, like, I mean, I get. Yeah. I mean, what you could say is like the ship is huge and like maybe just.
Yeah, 430 or something like that.
Yeah, maybe it's like just, you know, maybe just military background myself. Like the highest guy, even though it's like, hey, this is our, you know, big wing or whatever the case may be, the highest guy ain't going to know the lowest guy. And if he does, that's probably not a good thing, to be honest. So it could be something like that too, you know?
And I probably have, maybe a favoritism or unique perspective or something like that, whatever, because I'm bad with my words. I'm sorry. But because I grew up watching Voyager, so I have a little bit of a skewed perspective. That's the term.
Okay.
Because in Voyager, there's only 150, 160 crewmen on the ship.
Yeah.
And Janeway specifically makes it a point to know every single crewman.
Yeah.
And there's even an episode where there's like three that that happened to like slip under the rug that she wasn't paying attention to. So she made it a point to get to know them all.
Okay.
But yeah, Captain Kirk has 400 plus crewmen, and it, when they're at a space station or dock somewhere or whatever, they might just onload and offload for, you know, some going on vacation and some signing onto their ship. And
yeah, very true.
So
it's probably,
I see. Yeah. That many crewmen, it'd be hard to keep track of everybody.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Yeah. But that that heroic entrance, you know,
yeah.
Like that and pause on the new guy.
As I'm talking about it too, I realize there must be somebody else in higher command, high command, you know, below the captain, who is in charge of all the crewmen, who does those exchanges and knows who's coming on and who's going off. So he probably doesn't even know when people are being traded back and forth.
True, they got a, probably like a whole team of four accountability if you think about it, you know, and then they probably have a team that's lower than obviously the commander. Or Kirk himself, of like these little, we'll call it like little commanders. You know, it's like, okay, who appointed him to be the next head of security, right? So someone had to like know this guy is qualified for it. Yeah.
That'd probably be a lieutenant commander.
Yeah. There you go.
I like it. Yeah. All right. So we see Gorvik enters the bridge and talks to Kirk for a little bit. And Kirk mentions that he knew his father, Gorvik's father. It doesn't go into detail, but. It just kind of touches on it there. And
well, isn't that the guy who died on the next team, the next redshirt team or whatever the case may be? I thought there was another group that died. And then when he said like, oh, this guy's died, they kind of looked at each other. Was that on it or was that it?
Rizzo, the one that was in sickbay, was Gorvik's friend.
Friend. And okay. So
Yeah. He mentions that here too. Right. So he's not going to give him special treatment because he knew his dad. And he mentions that you knew Rizzo, right? He's like, yeah, he was my friend. He's like, you know, pretty much, hey, your buddy just died in sick bay. Yeah. So he's trying to like make sure there's a fire in this guy's belly. And all right, you're going to come with me. We're going to figure this thing out together.
Which I did like that part, actually. It was kind of like the, I even wrote in my notes, it was like that whole like hurrah, let's go get this fucker kind of guy, you know? I was like, all right, Kirk is still displaying too much emotion, though. It's kind of like, hey, we're just being reckless. Let's just go and get it. And you don't really know what's. I mean, you kind of know because you got your confirmation with Rizzo, but I feel like you don't really know even how to handle it because this whole episode they haven't really been able to handle it well.
Yeah, and Kirk is naturally, you know, a little bit emotional and but smart, like a tactician. And Spock will check his emotions back and forth, but in this episode we do see Kirk a little more emotional than normal. And I like that, though, that we see he's already too invested in this. He's got a fire brewing in him, and he finds this guy and is like, hey, you got a fire in you too, right? Okay, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, you're gonna be on my side, and we're gonna go figure out what's going on.
I need one person to be my friend right now. Everybody thinks I'm crazy.
I need somebody I could throw in front of this alien that'll die for me. Okay, so they return to the planet and to try to find what killed their crewman. This seems premature to me, though. If I was a captain, like, they were scanning from the ship, but they didn't find anything. But we've touched on already, he's emotional right now. They didn't find anything, and they just, all right, we're going to go back to where they died and do it all over again. And so they split up into two groups, and sure enough, Garavik's team is attacked. Garavik hesitates to fire for just like a second or two. And then his other crewmates are attacked. One's dead, one's critical. So that's, I mean, is a good scene, understandable that he hesitated for a second. He saw the alien and it was surprising to him and everything. And then it moved to attack, but it moved so fast at that point, he wasn't able to do anything to stop it. But I got to ask you, with military experience and everything, have you ever experienced anything like that? That kind of like being frozen in place, hesitation?
I was like, no, I have not ever experienced a killing fog. That way.
I've used a killing fog on people. Yeah. You ever pulled a blanket over your wife?
Yeah. Oh, man.
It's good.
Shit. Okay. I don't know. It's like you're always trained to like be on the lookout of what's coming, what to be expected. But it's also common sense, or, well, human, to be frozen in something that you're so unfamiliar with at the same time. So I can't say I ever, like, experienced something that was, like, super unfamiliar to me, especially, like, a Killing Falcon, and you don't know what you're looking at, right? So you're like, I mean, obviously you're like, oh, let's go get this guy, right, with Kirk. And it's kind of like, well, what am I really looking for? Well, you're looking for the smoke. And you're like, oh, what the shit is that, you know? So it's kind of like I would freeze too. And then one, you kind of, he got the new guy, I'm already forgetting his name, I forget his name really. The new
Garavik.
He kind of got his confirmation like, oh, shit, this is it, when the other two died. So,
yeah,
it's like also, understandable.
I don't know if they showed or explained it yet, but we at least find out later that Garavik's dad was with Kirk 11 years ago. Garavik's dad died. He was the captain of the previous ship. And so he's like, for the first time, seeing this creature that he thinks is the creature that killed his dad. So that alone, I mean, just seeing an alien creature might make you freeze. But then with all this emotional strings attached, like, that would definitely make you, like, you know, not have great reaction time probably.
It's definitely, this whole episode is definitely emotion, how do you say it? Heavily involved with, like, people's emotions. So it's pretty neat to see these inner battles. So it's not just Kirk himself that is fighting these demons on the inside, so.
Yeah. And I like how the two characters, obviously, throughout the episode mirror each other. And, you know, Kirk relates so much with this young kid and then eventually kind of helps him get through it. Yeah. Like, you know, nobody was there to help Kirk when he was younger.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. So after this, we jump back to the ship. We have a captain's log where Kirk is explaining that he believes that this is an intelligent creature, and it is the same that decimated the USS Farragut 11 years ago. So that's the ship that he was on. Mm-hmm. Kirk's passion suggests that he was aboard, but at that time, they didn't really clarify it. But yeah, later we find out he was one of the survivors. 200 crewmen, I think, died on that ship that day. Spock and McCoy don't seem to agree with Kirk's decision to stay and fight this creature because they're meant to go deliver, they're en route or whatever, to pick up from one ship and go deliver to a planet some vaccines and other critical medical supplies. And so this stuff is perishable, and it's the longer they wait, the more likely that people are going to be dying because they're not getting this supplies. So everyone's trying to tell him, like, hey, dude, we need to get going. We can't just sit around here and you know, look into this, but Kirk is emotionally invested and not willing to leave yet.
And that happened right away, too, with this episode. Like, that was the first question, like, hey, you know, if we continue to stay here, we're going to get a delay in this shipment or whatever the case may be. So it's like right off the bat, Kirk is trying to fight these or make these heavy decisions. But then you learn they're only heavy decisions for himself only because he's battling this. Like you said now, when we learned that it was his past ship that he was on that was basically destroyed because of this thing.
And I like that. I like that they kind of peel back the layers. We see, I mean, especially with me jumping ahead a little bit here, everyone listening knows why he's making these emotional decisions. But when we're watching it, we're like, why is he so irrational? Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, dude, yeah, some of your crewmen died, but more are gonna die if you stay here, and you have, you know, maybe a million people on this planet or something like that, you know, some bigger numbers that are gonna die. Like, you need to go take care of that first and maybe come back if you can. But yeah, as the story goes on, we peel back these layers and see why he's being emotional. And it's like, okay, that makes kind of a lot more sense. And then we see him kind of work through it.
Yeah, exactly.
So after returning to the ship, after Garavik's away team members were killed, well, one was killed, one was injured, but I think later he dies too. Anyways, so they question Garavik about what happened. They want to ask, like, what the creature looked like and stuff like that. But it becomes clear that Garavik hesitated briefly before firing on the creature, and Kirk is mad. He relieves him of duty and sends him to his quarters to remain in his quarters. So it's that as another one, and we've seen it before. We've talked about it probably too much already, but that was like a very emotional reaction from Kirk, unique, like not of his character. So I think that was probably the most transparent so far too of him being emotional. He was kind of in a mood before, but now this was like, oh, that was a harsh decision that you made. To this guy just witnessed two of his teammates die. He kind of maybe had a chance to stop it and didn't, or wasn't able to, was frozen, whatever. So he's probably not in the best state. And then you say, pretty much, you suck at your job, you're fired, go to your room. Yeah, relieving him of duty. So that was harsh. Even, I think it was either Spock or McCoy. I think it was McCoy who mentioned, like, yeah, that was kind of harsh treatment. But
yeah, no, I agree. When he was sitting at that table and kind of putting the hammer down, I was like, God dang, man, this guy like literally just flinched for 2 seconds for this killer fog. And yeah, it's like, what the heck? And of course, you know, we learn more later. But it kind of just showed that if you're not going to be on, because of whatever Kirk is battling, if you're not going to be on like your A game, your 100%, then it's like, we don't have time for that because people continue to die. So,
yeah. Yeah. You know. So after this, we go to the bridge and we see that more of the crew is pressuring Kirk to just carry on with their medical supply drop. But Kirk is getting short. He's barking orders. He's just getting frustrated with everybody. So it was, you know, just more reassurance or like investment in the fact that he's getting emotional and just mad at this point. Mm-hmm. Then we jump to sickbay. We see that Spock actually asks for advice from Dr. McCoy, which was a first. It's kind of funny. McCoy's like taken back by it. But he doesn't understand the concept of obsession, though. I think I know they wanted to write this in to explain a little bit or give us the perspective. I don't know that Kirk is obsessing over this alien, but this also doesn't seem like something that would be outside of Spock's knowledge. He's a smart Vulcan and he should understand, even if he can't feel human emotion, or he can, he's also half human, and even full Vulcans feel more emotion than humans. They just are smart about how they can suppress them. But I would think he would understand obsession and wouldn't have to ask somebody about it. That being said, I know it is just a device to bring up the topic and make us think about it. But
it was definitely because like you said, like the Vulcan are still extremely smart. They just obviously don't express those emotions, but they still understand it all. Right.
Yeah.
It was more of a, I'm going to bring up the Next Generation. It was more of a Data moment to me. Like where there's been many times where Data is sitting there and trying to understand the human feelings. And it's like, okay, well, I feel like that's perfect for a Data to try to understand what this obsession, what a obsession is. Obsession. Yeah.
And it's like, it's mainly just another way to like say, hey guys, this is what the issue is. Exactly, because he's an outsider looking in and so are we. But yeah, it just seemed like there might've been a better way to say it without making Spock seem like he doesn't know anything about human emotion.
Yeah.
But it's all right.
I'm still there. I mean, like you said, it's just, they're just planting the story for us, the seed for us. So, I mean,
At this point is where we actually find out that Garavik's father was the captain of the Farragut 11 years ago when it was attacked by the same creature, or at least a very similar creature. And nearly half of the crew, including the captain, which is Garavik's dad, were killed that day. And we find that one of the survivors was a young James T. Kirk. So this is all brought up from the record tapes that Spock and McCoy were reviewing. But at this point, would you consider Kirk's actions so far to be obsession? Do you think, you know, I don't understand he's getting mad and irritated and whatnot, but do you think he's obsessed with finding this creature?
I would have to. And you kind of get that from we talked about it already, but the very beginning of the episode, it was talking about, hey, like, okay, we got to, you know, do our shipment, right? And it's like, well, he's basically saying, screw that shipment. I'm going to make sure I solve this, resolve this now because of this past experience. And I want to get to, okay, I won't jump ahead a little bit, but because he's at this point, he's not caring about his crew members. I feel like this is just how I felt when I was watching it, is only caring about him kind of writing what he feels like is his wrongs. What do you think? Is this like something to be obsessed over, or?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't look up like the definition of obsession, but in my mind, it's like a illogical, irrational, and emotional fixation on one thing. And he's definitely that. He's very much like focused on figuring out what's causing this. I mean, he's got 200 lives he feels responsible for back when he was a kid. So, or when he was younger. So he feels like, you know, that was his fault. And maybe this is his chance to redeem himself, maybe save half of his crew or save whoever's coming after them that might interact with this creature.
Yeah.
So he feels a lot of guilt. And yeah, I think it's all justified, his obsession with this creature. But yeah, it does seem like at this point it's obsession, but based on, you know, guilt for how many lives that he thinks he was, I don't know how you say it, responsible for losing 11 years ago.
Yeah.
All right. So then we go to the captain's quarters. Kirk is already second guessing his decisions a little bit. He's kind of talking to himself. Bones enters and talks to Kirk about the attack 11 years ago, because he knows now from reviewing the tapes. Bones argues with Kirk that he pretty much did all that he can do. He did his duty to the best of his abilities, you know, more or less. Kirk argues that if he hadn't hesitated, perhaps his 200 crewmates would have lived, including his captain, who he explains, you know, McCoy kind of draws that out of him, that that was a very important person to him. He was with him since he graduated from the academy.
Yeah, and I do want to highlight that that's what I was going to try not to jump, is that when we find out that he hesitated, then you kind of, I like this, because then you kind of go backwards to that, you know, relief of the new security, head of security. You're like, oh, shit, so this is why he was that much more angry at that table. So I like that. That was neat to, like, just come back and visit.
Yeah, I imagine he's kind of projecting his self-loathing, or his you know, how mad he is at himself for letting 200 people die in his image, in his mind. He's putting that on Garavik as well. Like, you know, you hesitated? How could dare you hesitate? Why would you hesitate? You could have just, you know, just now killed 200 of your crewmates. And yeah, his guilt being put on him.
Yeah, especially with all the questions that he was asking. It's kind of like he's literally just revisiting himself in that situation because of all the constant, like I said, the questions he was asking. So it was kind of neat to, like, learn that and then to think backwards and be like, oh, shit, okay. It makes sense now. So,
and really thinking of, like, the perspective and everything, Garavik handles it pretty well. Like, he accepts the punishment, goes to his quarters, and kind of mopes, just, but, like, I would be so mad. I'd be like, what? Like, I did the best that I could do. Yeah. Like, how dare you, you know, shun me or relieve me of duty?
He got farther than anybody else, actually, with that fog in that episode. So, I mean, damn.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, maybe relieve me of duty for, like, mental health reasons, to allow me time to recover from seeing my crewmates die or whatever, but not, don't just say, like, pretty much saying, you know, you suck, you're fired, get out of my face.
That's fine.
Yeah. But so Bones is going back and forth with Kirk, trying to make him feel better, kind of, but he explains that, like, you don't even know if the phaser fire would have affected this creature. You know, if you did shoot immediately with the extra second or two you had, you don't know what it would have done. But Kirk says, I could feel his malevolence. It's evil. And it must be destroyed. So he, you know, has this, it's just, again, that emotional connection with the creature.
Yeah.
And Bone says, to be so obsessed, you could destroy yourself, your career, a young man that reminds you of yourself. So yeah, a lot of back and forth. Kirk says, don't push your friendship. He says, this is professional. I'm preparing a medical log, let's see, it's a medical log entry on my estimation of the physical and emotional condition of a starship captain. That's pretty much saying, I'm going to pull the doc card and I'm going to have you removed from command if I find that you're mentally unfit in this situation, which he's done before in recent episodes.
That was actually, is it Bone? It's McCoy that actually puts the medical there. Okay. It's like I had the same feelings as him. I was like, damn, dude, this guy's sick in the head right now. And as soon as, like, McCoy mentions that, I was like, oh, get him! You know? Like, get him. I was like, there it is, let's go. And then, at this point,
McCoy says that requires a command-grade witness, and so he brings in Spock to back him up, because he has to, you know, witness his report or whatever. So the two of them ask Kirk questions, and Kirk just kind of cuts him off because they're trying to follow the book. And he's just like, cut to the chase, get rid of all the BS, and just ask the questions you need to ask. And so Kirk does a good job here, though, defending his argument, mm-hmm. his position. He asks, you know, is it deadly? You know, which they're like, yeah, I mean, it killed several crewmen already. And if this creature is what I think it is, meaning like if it is the one that was so many light years away 11 years ago, that this means it's spacefaring. It could travel anywhere. It could travel anywhere. It can change shape. It's not detectable by our sensors, and it can kill anything as far as we can tell. So it's a major risk. We need to be here to try to, you know, do what we can to identify it and stop it or kill it if we can.
Yeah.
So with that, his decent argument, pretty much Bones backs off and says, all right, you know, you make sense. I'm going to leave my log open, I think is what he said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he did.
Yeah. But do you think this argument here that he proves he's not obsessed with the way he's explaining it so logically?
I think he's just tactful to support his argument of not being obsessed with this and that it's for the greater good. You know, yeah. I still think he still has that obsession because I still think it's those past events are still haunting him. So he's just doing it for himself, really, to kind of calm those things, calm those demons down. Mm-hmm. But I think, I mean, if you're Captain Kirk, right? So it's kind of like you got persuasion, man. I mean, the first thing when this episode started, and I don't watch like this is my first ever episode of the original series. But I know Kirk's lover, right? So when this episode started, I was like, this fucking guy, right? Like, first episode, I was like, smells like, I know the smell, smells like honey. Whose fucking perfume are you sniffing right now? That's what I thought the whole time. I was like,
who's honey?
Yeah, I was like, okay, here we go. The theories are true. So, what do you think? I think he's just being tactful about it now. I mean, do you think that there is... What do you think about that?
I agree with you. I think he still is obsessed, but he is using his wit and his words to position himself where mm-hmm. my obsession is for the greater good. And we all need to kind of be obsessed and work on this together, you know, and attack it to solve this problem. Because my obsession is in the right direction, at least. So.
Most definitely. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So after this, Chekov calls from the bridge and says that the alien is leaving the planet. So then... Kirk makes a call. The Enterprise is in pursuit, and he's pushing the limits. Even Scotty's on the bridge telling him, like, hey, you know, we can't go warp 8 much longer. We're going to blow up at, you know, any minute now, which we've heard before. I haven't seen it happen yet, but Kirk likes to push it to the edge. So while they're pursuing it, they're very slowly gaining on it, so it would take, you know, weeks or more to actually catch up to it at the speed they're going. But they're able to see it and scan it more from space, I guess. And Spock mentions that it's in a borderline state between matter and energy. So that was, and this is where we actually can see it in space. And it's kind of a cool gray cloud effect that was definitely a remastered shot. But at this point, Scotty's telling him, hey, we're going to blow up if we keep going too much. So they slow down to warp 6. Then we go to Garavik's quarters. This was just kind of a lighthearted scene to soften up the episode, I think. But Nurse Chapel comes in to check on Garavik. He's obviously, you know, not happy, but she brings him food. She tries to cheer him up a little bit, but he's not having any of it. So she has a floppy disk or a data chip or whatever. And she tells him, okay, well, you need to eat something. Dr. McCoy, you know, gave special orders, a prescription for you to eat. All it says is eat.
Yeah.
And if you don't follow these orders, he'd be happy to bring you into sick bay and hook you up to a feeding tube pretty much.
Yeah.
And so she kind of gives him some tough love and leaves on that. And so you see he kind of nods and like looks at the plate or whatever. And it's funny though, because she goes back to the sick bay and drops off that data chip. And McCoy's like, this, what were you doing with this? Some kind of like respiratory, you know, illness manual or something like that. And she's like, oh, just using some tools of persuasion or mm-hmm, something like mm-hmm. I can't remember how she worded it, but yeah, it was just funny that she tricks him into eating his food.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice to have that little pause to, it kind of helps with the, I don't want to say character for a little bit, but it helps to, bring some heart into the cast, I guess you could say. You know, yeah. Like you kind of have this little like loving now, because then you'll think of that nurse, how like the things that she'll do just to take care of the people, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's a nice little break. And it wasn't like something that was excessively long to like, oh, bro, can we get to the fucking,
yeah,
back to the story? Very brief. So it was nice. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She used a little bit of psychology is what it was, not whatever I said earlier.
Yeah.
All right, so we get back to the chase. The creature is slowing down as the Enterprise slows down, which is like surprising. Kirk thought it was just going to outrun them and disappear. Garavik requests to return to his post, though I think Kirk was ignoring him at that point. Not really. He's focused on this creature. The Enterprise fires phasers and photon torpedoes at the creature with no luck, has zero effect on the creature. But then the creature begins to come towards the ship. You're in space, you've been chasing this deadly creature, you fire on it, it does absolutely nothing, and it starts to approach your ship. What do you do?
Shit myself.
I'm like, I don't think they really reacted. They just kind of let it come toward them. I'm like, you were just lecturing this kid about not reacting, and here you guys are just letting this come towards your ship.
Literally just going to say the same thing. It's the same situation as Kirk, and then, God, I guess, what's his, Garavik. It's the same thing, because you don't know at that moment what you're dealing with, and then you freeze up, and then you have to try to like collect yourself again and figure out, okay, how do I attack this? So honestly, like, I wouldn't, like, in that situation and nothing's working, I would take the hit, kind of like what they did. Obviously, when we get to the next scene, I mean, can you think of any, like,
I don't think you're fast enough
to make a maneuver or anything, though.
I'm a fan of Voyager's technobabble stuff, so I would have launched maybe three probes that you can triangulate a force field around this creature. Yeah, you need more than three, at least four probes, to make a force field around it.
Okay.
See if that contains it. Try your tractor beam, see if that will like push it or manipulate it in any way. Try every type of technology you have, because obviously just phasers and torpedoes aren't doing anything.
Do you think the Enterprise had that type of technology before the Voyager, though?
Well, yeah, I don't know. To be able to just like quickly launch buoys that can make a force field, maybe not. That'd probably have to be something custom made.
Yeah.
They definitely had a tractor. Pretty sure they had a tractor beam.
Yeah.
But I would use some kind of technology. Basically, and if nothing else, at least back away slowly while it's approaching you.
Because did it match its speed, though, right? So I wonder if it would back away a certain speed, the Enterprise, that would kind of like match it to catch up. Follow you now, you know?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, maybe they could have led it somewhere.
Yeah. While trying to come up with the game plan. Yeah. But at the same time, it's the same thing where you don't know what you're dealing with and you freeze up. And that's happened multiple times in this episode. So it's kind of like being a lesson of this episode.
Yeah. So when the creature gets to the ship, it enters through a vent, and right away it kills one crewman, injures another. I believe it was Scotty, I don't know, one of the guys mentioned that they could dump radioactive waste through the ventilation system. Seems very dangerous, because the ventilation system kind of goes everywhere. Like, don't turn it back on by accident, because you're just going to kill everybody. But anyways, it seems to work later on. Bones actually apologizes to Kirk. I had to note that, because I don't think we see that very often. But then I think it was Spock that was explaining that the creature can throw itself in and out of sync with space-time. So Spock kind of explains that if Kirk was firing on it 11 years ago or just recently with a phaser, it would have done nothing. It's pointless. The creature can just choose to not be there when the laser's going by him.
Yeah.
And
I guess that's what they kind of learned when they're shooting from the ship, right?
What was that?
I guess they kind of learned that lesson while they're shooting the creature from the ship itself, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because the phasers went right through it. The photon torpedoes didn't do anything to it. It's like, okay, whatever Spock kind of learned what part of the trick was, at least, was that it was, not in sync with space-time, but pretty much whatever it does, it's able to avoid attack. So Kirk says, I'm not worried about that, I'm worried about my ship. So now he's trying to like shift focus, where it's like, okay, well, even if I couldn't destroy it back then, I don't really care about my guilt. That's not what's bothering me. It's really bothering me that It's my ship is at risk right now.
Yeah, sure, buddy.
That's a bunch of BS.
Yeah, I know.
You have been so focused and obsessed over this because of what happened 11 years ago, and now you're changing your story, but whatever.
With like 10 minutes left of the episode, okay, sure, I just watched like 40 minutes of you being obsessed with this thing, and now you're going to tell me to like 10 more minutes left, and you're going to be like, ah, nah, it's not really about that. Okay, sure.
Yeah, not a big deal.
Sure.
So then we see Spock visits Garavik and pretty much tries to explain the same thing to him, that you shouldn't blame yourself. You couldn't destroy it, even if you shot it 100 times before it moved. Wouldn't have done nothing. And then the creature starts coming through the vent in Garavik's quarters. Spock tells him to get out of there, and Spock tries to hold it back. The like dumbest thing I think I've ever seen, though, is Spock just putting his hands over a vent, like fingers open and everything. Grab a clipboard or something, bud, a pillow, anything. Like, that's not going to stop a gas from coming through a vent.
Yeah, man. So, I told you earlier, I'm trying to ignore like the old school like stuff, but. That one,
that's not even that old one, school. That was just,
yeah, you can't.
Director's choice.
That was just like, what the shit, man? The smoke's still coming out. Like, what? Like, I thought, like, is the smoke smart enough to just spit that little tube thing back out of the vent? That's what I was thinking at first, because he's holding his hand against the vent. So I'm like, what are you doing? You know, I was confused right there, to be honest. Yeah.
To be fair, he went over there to like switch the vent closed, because it's like an old school vent with a lever on it, and because Garavik threw something at it earlier, it actually broke that switch, so it snapped right off when he tried to do it, so he couldn't close it, and that was his game plan.
Yeah,
but still, like, okay, just leave the room and close the door.
Yeah,
because that's, well, your hands isn't gonna do anything. But we find out from that scene that Spock is pretty much impervious to this, because his blood is different, and this creature feeds on something in the blood.
Yeah, I was like, hold on, I have it actually.
Hemo something. I have it later in my notes.
Yeah, hemoglobe instead of iron.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. Hemoglobe is made up of copper instead of iron, preventing any death that may occur. Okay, I had to take a note of that. I was like, okay, what the hell? So I didn't know if it was like in his like blood or whatever the case may be, but yeah, I had definitely had to pay attention to that.
So Scotty comes up there, is nearby, and he's able to reverse the pressure in the cabin to pretty much create suction in the cabin, and draws the creature out. So that gets it out of there, and Spock is able to walk out safely. But yeah, we realize Spock is just fine. Mm-hmm. They determine that it must be the difference in his blood.
Yeah.
And then there's like a bit of a pep talk from Kirk when he calls Garavik over to ask him what he learned from the bridge, because he watched he was on the bridge when they fired on the creature the first time with phasers and photon torpedoes, and it did nothing. And so this was kind of like Spock explained to Kirk that, you know, that stuff wasn't your fault because you couldn't do anything, and Spock also spoke to Garavik. Now this is Kirk talking to Garavik and kind of trying to make him feel better about what he did. And he pretty much asks him, like, did you see what happened? Yeah, you know, what happened? It didn't do anything. He's like, exactly. It wouldn't have done anything 11 years ago either. So, you know, now or then, no matter what weapons we use, we wouldn't have been able to stop the creature. So,
yeah. And when that conversation happened, it's kind of like, well, okay, the moral of the story essentially is that you can't continue to be obsessed with things that are not in your realm. Yeah, in your control. So what's that pep talk? It's like, obviously when that conversation happened between Spock and Kirk, it was like, okay, this whole like relief was a different character essentially. Like it was all like that pain kind of went away from him. And I thought that was a pretty good like moral of the story, to be honest. I mean, and it's a true one too. I mean, you can't obsess with things you can't be in control of.
Yeah. And that was a good moment, because like Kirk was really being a jerk and he really made this kid feel bad. And so he took the time to like, you know, basically apologize to him and tell him, like, you know, this wasn't your fault. He didn't say, you know, I'm a jerk and I was being too mean, but he tells him, you know, you shouldn't feel guilty, pretty much.
Yeah.
And I think Kirk telling him this was also a way of like absolving himself and freeing himself from the guilt that he felt from 11 years ago by saying it out loud and kind of forgiving this kid who he kind of sees that is represents him when he was, you know, 11 years younger.
Yeah.
It was kind of like freeing himself, I think, from that, from that guilt.
I mean, essentially we already see kind of him put himself in Garavik earlier when it was in that meeting room, right, with Spock and McCoy. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, I can see what you're saying now, relieving himself, and because he felt, it felt like he put himself in him already. So,
yeah. So after that, we see that the creature left the ship and is at high warp speed already. It's almost out of sensor range. Kirk makes the order to head directly to the Tycho star system. So they'd mentioned at some point, too, that this creature had changed directions multiple times to try to lose them, pretty much. And so they're like, you know, don't you want to pursue it? And Kirk's like, no, just head straight for the Tycho star system. He realizes, he believes at least, that where 11 years ago, where the ship, the Farragut, was attacked, he has a sense or a feeling from this creature that was the creature's home, and he believes it's returning home. Mm. He got a sense from it recently that it was going home. So so they head straight there. They talk about how critical this is. You know, I don't know where they got this from. Maybe it's just techno babble that they didn't really explain, but they say that if this creature multiplies, it's not just going to make, you know, two or three or, you know, a dozen or something like that. It's going to turn into thousands. So it's critical that they, now that they understand more or less what this creature is, that they stop it, because once it starts to multiply, it will be all over the place. I don't know why it didn't multiply in the last 11 years, or maybe it did already, and this is just one of thousands, but pretty much we're meant to believe that this is still the same one, the only one, and pretty soon it's going to be ready to multiply and take over the galaxy, pretty much, because it'll be unstoppable.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious if, like, the feeding of the deaths, the murders that this Vaugh thing did was, like, kind of like its source to be stronger to multiply. But I was kind of, like, taking it that way, because, like what you said, it's been a little, what's preventing it so many years before to not.
Its thing. And it sounded like it was taking the iron from their blood, mm-hmm. but they could have explained it as if, like, well, that's where your soul is, and it's just collecting souls, and mm-hmm. eventually it can multiply and make more or something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But either way, or just iron from blood. Okay, so they do mention that an antimatter explosion should kill the creature. So it can change what material it's made out of, and it's between matter and energy and all that stuff, but theoretically, an antimatter explosion, doesn't matter what matter it's made of, it will still destroy it. So they plan to use a hemoplasma, I think I wrote that right, I don't know, like a big jar of blood, to lure this creature to the bomb. So the creature comes and consumes the whole jar of blood, the hemoplasma, before they're ready. And so Kirk and Garavik have to act as bait. So they kind of like lure, you know, they stay there and they tell the ship to be ready to beam them back, and kind of lure the creature to where the bomb is. They call just in the nick of time to be beamed up when they and to have the bomb detonated pretty much at the same time. But as they beam up, the transporters aren't working right. Their image is fading in and out. Their pattern might get scattered throughout space. But Spock, I think it was Spock, is able to dial in the transporters, and eventually they materialize both crewmen safely and alive, and the creature was destroyed. We don't see it, but Kirk does mention the creature was destroyed.
Yeah, which is like, so, where'd that confirmation come from?
Yeah, I think Kirk just said it. It's like, that's true. He didn't even hear from anybody on the ship. That would have been good if Scotty was on the bridge or somebody is like, yep, that energy signature is gone or something like that, but that's okay.
Yeah.
They tend to wrap up the last few minutes of an episode really fast because I think it's after the last commercial break.
It almost seemed like that actually with the ending. When I was watching it, I was like, okay, we did this whole build up for the fog, and then it was pretty quick, like, it's done.
Yeah, they do that. Oh, I think they want to really keep your attention, get you all the way to the last commercial break, because these shows were made, you know, based on commercial ad time. Mm-hmm. And so after that, it's like, oh crap, okay, we only got, you know, a solid 2.5-3 minutes to wrap up the rest of the story and have a happy conclusion. So they tend to have a quick ending like that. So then the Enterprise resumes their mission to go deliver the life-saving medicines that hopefully did not expire.
Yeah, hopefully people are just fucking, hundreds of people are just aren't dead because of this, this obsession.
That would have been a sad, but like kind of funny, but sad. I could, what's Lower Decks would totally do that where like you just see a shot of like this ship of these people that were waiting for the medicines and they're all dead already.
Shoot.
You see the Enterprise pulling in through a I don't know that, in the background.
That is funny. One thing I did want to say, going back to that scene where they're trying to act as bait, I get that Garavik is trying to be like heroic and all right, like take me instead of Kirk. But who the fuck hits your captain like that and tries to knock, literally tries to knock out Kirk, but then Kirk being Kirk was like, what the hell, bitch? And turns around and starts whipping his ass. And that's
Is that just a mosquito or what?
Yeah.
I like that.
And that's where
they're like legit gonna fight over who's gonna die and who's not.
Like, what the hell? Like, I just, I don't know. I was like, when that happened, when he was like, cry chop his neck, whatever, I was like, who the fuck hits the captain like that? Like, what the hell? And then that's the part I was talking about where, you know, you were talking about like practical effects and shit like that in the very beginning. It's like they bumped into a rock in the background and the rock moves and it's like, okay, I caught that one. Come on,
it's
guys.
It's styrofoam.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention too, at the very end, the like closing scene, we see Kirk is asking Garavik to join him later in his quarters so he can tell him stories about his dad, which was kind of cool. He knew his dad as the captain of his ship 11 years ago. So, I think he called him. I wanted to put tall tales. I put tall tales in the notes, but he actually called them tall stories. We have some tall stories about your father. It's like, that sounds a little funny, but yeah, whatever. But it was kind of a good ending.
Yeah, it was a little heartfelt ending. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, once again, we did lose, I think, five or so crewmen in this away mission. So, it's not a happy day. They always try to leave on a happy note. I get it.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe leave on like doing the ceremonial burial or launching them in space or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's okay. They're Richards. They get swept under the rug.
Yeah.
All right. Can you think of, you kind of touched on it earlier. What was your moral of the story that you were saying?
Yeah.
There?
Yeah. I think it's definitely the whole, you can't, harp on something so much that it drives you this much insane, and it's really out of your control, right? You can't be obsessed with something that you're not in control with, and because it's really just going to hinder your performance,
ability, performance,
just even you're just going to be sitting there nonstop thinking about things that you should have done differently, but at the end of the day, it's out of your control. It happened, and we learned with Captain Kirk, it's like no matter what you would have done in that situation, it was going to happen that way. So
he didn't know that at first, but later on he does realize too that it's like, well, no matter what I did, it still would have been that way. And no matter what I do now, it's still going to be the way it was, because I can't go back. Even if it was affected by phaser fire, I can't go back and shoot it and prevent it from happening then. My moral was, don't let your emotions control your decision making.
There you go. Okay.
It's a very common one, because Spock being logical and Kirk being emotional, they, you know, touch on that all the time, but I like it. I like Spock. I like, logical approach to most decision making and cut out emotions. But,
yeah, for sure.
What grade would you give this episode?
Okay. So, like I said, this is my first, the original series episode I've ever watched. But I'm not disappointed, for sure. No doubt about it.
Crazy to me. It's the I mean, I know you're watching a lot of other Star Trek right now.
Yeah, I am.
But
I am.
Like, I've at least seen, before I started going through and watching these two review, I'd at least seen a few here and there, like late at night and stuff like that. But never seen original series before. This isn't the best episode to start on, but it is a pretty good one.
It is. And I think it's because it's like, okay, well, I was like enjoying Discovery, and then we got the Lower Decks, then we got the next
Strange New Worlds.
But then it's so like, okay, right, well, I'm going to watch Next Generation, just kind of like hear it nonchalantly. Then I get super into that. Then it's like, shit, now I'm really going to pay attention. So it's like, after this, though, because of you and Frank, I'm going to watch Voyager next, after Next Generation.
Nice.
So eventually I'll get to it. But that being said, I think I'm going to give this, like I said, okay, real quick, I'm going to give it a B first. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm going to give it a B is because I like that the conflict within themselves and with the alien life form also. So it was a lot of, and then like the one thing that really was like, oh, that's why, and I kind of had that moment, was the part when you find out that Kirk basically did the same thing as Garavik, and then you're like, oh shit, he's just kind of like, the same thing's happening again, he's just living that scene through someone else. So
yeah.
I enjoyed it.
I'm gonna give it a C plus. I was gonna go a C, but after reviewing it it's better than than I thought, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. What was some of the to give it a C, but what were some of the things that you didn't care for? Like what did you notice that was kind of slipping your grade for you?
Like Spock trying to hold back smoke with his fingers. I mean, there's a lot of little things like that. That's like, I mean, come on.
Yeah. Okay.
And they shoot the rock with the phaser, and it kind of flops off. It seems a little cheesy. Just some, not really the effects that were cheesy, but it's like it should have just been written a little bit differently. Certain scenes like that, but and the story overall, it was. I do like how it's, you know, the two guys having the same experience, kind of mirroring over each other, and Kirk is kind of living through this kid again, but. But the story, it didn't have much of a B plot.
Mm-hmm.
And I like when they can carry, you know, even, you know, it doesn't have to be a big deal, but some kind of B plot behind the main story. So,
does the practical effects affect your grade, very much when you're reviewing these episodes?
Not really. Yeah. I want to make sure, like, I understand, you know, back in the 60s, especially they didn't have the CGI that we're getting used to with how beautiful Strange New Worlds is.
Yeah.
but as long as it made sense to do it that way back then.
Okay.
But a lot of stuff they'll do, and it's like, I wouldn't have done that back then if I had the technology back then. I would have, you know, shot it a little bit differently or something.
Yeah.
The smoke, like, that was a perfect example of a shot done well. When the smoke comes out of the rock and then they just play it in reverse, like, that's cheesy. We know how that's done. At least I know how that's done now, but back then I was like, oh, that's pretty smart. Like, see it come out, it kind of lingers for a little bit, and then you see it go back in. That's
So you're more of like, okay, obviously the smoke with the hands of Spock, and then it's kind of like, well, since when are we using phasers to mine shit, essentially? So you're like,
and it's tritanium, which is supposed to be, you know, like the hull of a ship, so it should take a lot more than just a hand phaser to make a hole in it.
But for sure.
Yeah, but it was a pretty good episode, but there's been a lot better, and there's been a lot worse. There's some that are just like, oh my god, we have to review this one, don't we? But most of them are pretty good. I'm a huge Star Trek fan, so I love watching them, even the bad ones. Really, me and Kevin especially would talk so much more about the bad episodes for some reason.
Yeah.
It's just easier to harp on them, and we end up talking way too long, but
that's funny.
It's fun.
For sure.
All right. Well, don't forget to join us next week. If you guys like this, next week we will be reviewing season 2, episode 14, Wolf in the Fold.
All right. Then, John, I do want to say one more time, thank you for inviting me on. This is fun, especially just having something, a whole new experience to watch. But definitely you can catch us on Twitter, Geek Freaks Podcast, as well as Instagram, Twitch, Discord, and then the geekfreakspodcast.com. So definitely, you know, give us a holler or something like that. So.
All right. Until next time, Transporter Room, 2 to beam up.